Welcome to another week of our 4.5 year verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired Word. Today, we turn our attention back to 1 Kings chapter number 18 and the story of the prophet Elijah. Yah is my God. That's what his name means. He is a prophet to the northern tribes of Israel during the later 870s and early 860s BC. The first big event of his reported ministry is a 3.5 year drought that impacts on the northern tribes of Israel and then up into Tyre and Sidon and probably up into Syria itself. People have no spare water. People have no spare food. Nothing is growing, so nothing can be harvested. And the story of Elijah is that he starts out first at the brook Kirath, being fed by ravens twice a day and watered by the water that was left in the little wadi there. Then he gets transferred up to Sidon, where God provides a woman from the Phoenicians, from the Sidonians, who has the beginnings of faith. And she trusts the command of the prophet, and we end up with a bottomless container of flour and a bottomless container of oil that feeds them probably morning and evening throughout what's remaining of the drought and the famine. But now we're ready for the end of that drought. Chapter 18 of 1 Kings, verse number 1. After many days, 3.5 years, the word of he who is came to Elijah, that is, up in Sidon, Zarephath, in the third year. So it's been 3 full years plus another 6 months, saying, go, show yourself to Ahab, and I will send rain upon the earth. So it's time for the word of God to be spoken to the king again. It was spoken 3.5 years earlier. No more rain until God says so through me. Now God says so through the prophet. So Elijah went to show himself to Ahab. Now the famine was severe in Samaria. Now that's probably not a reference to the city of Samaria, which is the capital city, but rather an incident of how the name gets applied to the entirety of the northern kingdom of Israel. That becomes a common practice in certain circles at this time. So the famine was bad everywhere, all over northern Israel. Ahab called Obadiah. Now that's not Obadiah of the book of the Old Testament. This is much earlier than that book. Who was over the household. So he is in charge of supplies and the use of those supplies in Ahab's palace, in Ahab's home. Now, Obadiah feared he who is greatly. So he is a believer in the one true God. Now, he's probably keeping that quiet because his boss and the wife of the boss are not allowing the worship, the open worship of he who is, Yahweh. They have completely required obedience of the people of northern Israel to Baal, the thunder and lightning god, and Asherah, the queen of heaven, or the fertility goddess, things like that are associated with her. So Obadiah had feared He Who Is Greatly, and when Jezebel cut off the prophets of He Who Is, so when she put the hit on them, probably killed a few of them, and the rest scatter, and they're being hunted. So Obadiah took 100 prophets of He Who Is, hid them by 50s, so two groups, in a cave, and fed them with bread and water. Now remember, he's in charge of supplies in the palace. So when he got word that 100 prophets of the true and living God were being hunted down by his mistress, he secrets them away nearby, and he makes sure that supplies get diverted from the royal supplies to take care of these men. And that's been going on for probably the better part of 3.5 years. Verse 5. Ahab said to Obadiah, "Go throughout the land to all the springs of water and to all the valleys. Perhaps we may find grass and save the horses and mules alive and not lose some of the animals." So they divided the land between them to pass through it. And Ahab went in one direction by himself, and Obadiah went in another direction by himself. So this guy is not just simply in charge of what's going on at the palace. He seems to have much broader logistical oversight. So what King Ahab and Obadiah are up to is they know where all the water sources are. They probably identified them much earlier during the drought, during the famine. So they're going to go back over the kingdom and see what the situation is with all those water supplies. Are they still flowing? Is there still a little bit of greenery around some of these remnants of water? And then based on that, they will know whether or not they have to kill a certain amount of animals that are still being used for probably agriculture more than anything else, or transport. Then the rest of the animals they can get rid of because, you know, animals that are not being used, they're just eating up supplies. You can't allow that during this drought and famine. So that's what the plan is figure out what the next step is in keeping people alive in northern Israel. Verse number 7. As Obadiah was on the way, behold, Elijah met him. So he's the contact point that God has given to the prophet. Obadiah recognized him. They've probably had interactions previous to the takeover by Ahab and Jezebel. So he fell on his face and said, "Is it you, my Lord Elijah?" So he shows him all this respect as the prophet of God. And he answered, "It is I. Now go, tell your Lord, behold, Elijah is here." So go and tell King Ahab, "I'm right here." And it's implied, "Come and meet me." But Obadiah said, "How have I sinned that you would give your servant into the hands of Ahab to kill me? As He Who Is Your God lives, there is no nation or kingdom where my Lord has not sent to seek you. So you've got to be kidding me. Ahab's been looking for you everywhere the last 3.5 years. In fact, this is what he's been doing. When they would say, 'He's not here,' he would take an oath of that kingdom or nation that they had not found you." So he was putting people under vows that they hadn't seen you anywhere, that they were not protecting you. Now you come and you say, "Go tell your Lord, behold, Elijah is here. As soon as I've gone from you, the spirit of He Who Is will carry you where I know not. And so when I come and I tell Ahab and he cannot find you, he will kill me, although I, your servant, have feared he who is from his youth, from my youth. So Obadiah is like afraid. He knows that Ahab is insane with his hatred of Elijah as the cause of this famine, this drought. And that if Elijah is not there at this exact spot when Obadiah brings him back to meet the prophet, he's going to fly into a rage and kill him. Even though, as Obadiah says, I have been a follower of the true and living God since I was a kid. You're setting me up to get me killed. Verse number 13. Has it not been told, my Lord, what I did when Jezebel killed the prophets of he who is? How I hid 100 men of he who is as prophets by 50s in a cave and fed them with bread and water? So he assumes that somehow Elijah ought to know that he's got 100 guys that he's been secretly protecting for the last 3.5 years or thereabouts. And so that shows just how much risk he's already involved in. Verse 14, and now you say, go tell your Lord, behold, Elijah's here, and then he's going to end up killing me. So you can appreciate this. I know I appreciate it. This guy has risked his life every single day of the Ahab Jezebel administration, where they have tried to eradicate the worship and devotion to the true and living God. And now he's afraid that it's going to end badly for him. But Elijah tells him, as he who is over the armies. This is Yahweh Tzabaoth. We've met this term before. It's a military term for God. It's kind of like commander-in-chief for us in the United States. It is the idea that God's in control of the situation. And it gets used a lot through this time period of Scripture. As he who is, Yahweh Tzabaoth, lives, before whom I stand, I will surely show myself to him today. So he makes a promise in the name of the true and living God. And so with that promise in the name of God, Obadiah went to meet Ahab and he told him. And so Ahab went to meet Eliyahu. Now, when Ahab met or saw Elijah, Ahab said to him, first thing out of his mouth, is that you, you troubler of Israel? And he answered back, I've not troubled Israel, but you have, and your father's house, because you've abandoned the commandments of he who is, and you've followed the Baalim, the Baals. Now, the reason it's in plural here is because every idol of Baal, located throughout northern Israel, is a separate worship site. And so there's bunches and bunches and bunches of them. But they're all devoted to the same thunder and lightning God. All right, so that's what he's talking about here, is you're the guy, your father's household, that'd be Omri, you're the administration that has been following this pagan worship. You're the guy that's causing the trouble, not me. Now, this is interesting. A lot of times when God's judgment comes upon people and upon nations, some of the individuals will very often lash out at the representatives of God who have warned that such judgment is coming, who have said that you need to repent or face the consequences. Very often the people underneath those consequences lash out at those who were just the messengers. It's the whole syndrome of killing the messenger. So he says, you're the problem, not me, which is true. Verse 19. Now comes the famous showdown. Now, therefore, send, gather all Israel to me at Mount Carmel. Now, Mount Carmel is not a singular peak. It is a ridge. It is a long ridge line. It's about 35 miles in total. It starts up there at that little bump on the Israeli coastline that sticks out into the Med. And it goes from there southeast about 35 miles down past Megiddo. And all of that is Mount Carmel. So we don't know exactly where this happens on this mountain, but it seems likely that it takes place somewhere near the western end of it, which is where the higher part of the ridgeline is. So, back to the text. Now therefore send and gather all Israel, meaning make a public declaration for as many people that can to meet us. Now, I'm going to add something here that will be explained later. To meet us at the old worship site for He Who Is on Mount Carmel. So everybody would have known in the region here around Mount Carmel where that old worship site was located. So tell them to meet us there, and also tell that to the 40 prophets of Baal and the 400 prophets of Asherah who eat at Jezebel's table. Now we know, because of historical analogs to this, that during times of warfare, during times of famine, the people in power don't go hungry, typically. They usually keep a good supply for themselves. And so in this case, we know that Jezebel kept her pet prophets. That's how I'm going to refer to them. Her pet prophets, 850 of them in total, well fed from the supplies that are getting less and less available in northern Israel. So the declaration is, gather the people of Israel that are around along with those 850 prophets that belong to Jezebel's false faith. Get them to the worship site. Verse number 20. So Ahab sent to all the people of Israel and gathered the prophets together at Mount Carmel. And then Elijah came near to all the people and said, how long will you go limping between two different opinions? Now, this seems to be a reference to the style of movement that happened during the worship of Baal. And it may tie into an earlier story that we had back in the time of the Judges. Remember that the Canaanites, or excuse me, the Philistines worshipped Dagon, their god, and when the ark was captured and put into Dagon's temple, that Dagon's idol fell in front of the ark, and at the last occasion of this happening, he lost his hands at the wrists and his head at his neck. It broke on the threshold that divided the place where the ark was and where the idol was located. And from that time period onward, the Philistines and all the associated Canaanites with them would jump over the threshold of Baal, because Dagon kind of gets morphed into this Baal worship. I wonder whether or not this limping that gets referenced here is that when they would go around in a circle or in a little conga line sort of worship that at some point they would jump like they were jumping over the lintel or over the threshold of their Baal temple. So he's kind of referencing that unique form of worship dance. So how long are you going to keep limping between two opinions? You know, jumping back and forth between he who is the true God and this Baal figure, the false God. Then he makes this declaration. If he who is God, then you follow him. But if Baal, then you follow him. So make up your mind. It reminds me a little bit of the Joshua command there in Joshua chapter 24. Either worship the gods of that were beyond the Euphrates River, or the gods of the people here, or worship the true and living God, he who is. But as for me and my house, we're going to worship he who is. Remember that? So here's Elijah putting them on the spot. Pick a side. But the people did not answer him a word. They are terrified, which we already know that Jezebel in particular, but Ahab along with her, have been killing the prophets of he who is. And presumably they would be on the lookout for anybody else that might be worshiping someone other than Baal and Asherah. So they're afraid to pick a side still, because it might get him killed. Verse 22. So Elijah said to the people, I only am left a prophet to he who is. Now that's not strictly true, because we know at least 100 are being hidden by Obadiah right now. But he's the only publicly presented prophet at this time, and that's probably what he's referencing. But Baal's prophets are 450 men. They've also got another 400, perhaps, women that are devoted to the prophet, the worship of Asherah. So a total of 850. Let two bulls be given to us. Let them choose one bull for themselves and cut it in pieces and lay it on the wood, but put no fire to it. That's the condition. Nobody gets to set fire to the sacrifice. And I will prepare the other bull, and I'll lay it on the wood and put no fire to it. And then you call upon the name of your God, and then I'll call upon the name of he who is, and the God who answers by fire, he is God. So if you won't pick a side, let's put the two gods to the test. Whichever God answers by fire, that's the one everybody has to choose. And so all the people answered, oh, that's well spoken. So they're willing to go on the record and say, that sounds like a good idea to us. So Elijah said to the prophets of Baal, you choose for yourselves one bull and prepare it first, for you're a many. Then call upon the name of your God, but put no fire to it. So you guys have got a lot more people. You go first. So they took the bull that had been given them. They prepared it. They called upon the name of Baal from morning until noon. So that's either sunrise or possibly mid-morning worship time, maybe, but several hours at least, saying, oh, Baal, answer us. And you can picture them doing their little Congo line thing, doing the limping thing. No one answered. And they limped around the altar that they had made. And then at noon, when the sun is right up high in the sky, Eliyahu mocked them, saying, cry aloud. He's a god. Either he's musing, you know, he's thinking about what he needs to do. He's thinking about God things. Or maybe he's relieving himself. Some people think that this means maybe he's going to his bathroom. It may be that he's taking his siesta in the middle of the day, you know. Or maybe he's on a journey. Or maybe he's asleep and he's got to be awakened. And so they cried aloud, and then they cut themselves after their custom with swords and lances until the blood gushed out upon them. So of course, they've got the bloody sacrifice on the altar. And so they can't get their God to respond after at least 6 hours. That's at minimum, from mid-morning to mid-afternoon. Might be longer than that. But they can't get their God to burn this sacrifice up during that period. So then they decide to add their own blood to the sacrifice. And they start doing self-mutilation. But nothing happens. Now, it is interesting. I wonder whether or not in the supernatural world, Satan and his bunch may have been trying to get in there and do a miracle. But if that's the case, God's angels are stronger and won't let it happen, because nothing happens. No fire from the sky for the false faith. Then Elijah said to all the people, "Come near to me." So get up here close. I want to talk to you. All the people came near to him, and he repaired the altar of He Who Is that had been thrown down. That's what I referenced earlier. Wherever they're at, up on Mount Carmel's ridgeline, there used to be an altar earlier in the history of northern Israel. We're probably somewhere 70 years or so into northern Israel's history. And so at some point, the true faith in northern Israel was practiced on this high place, at this altar. But after Ahab and Jezebel came to power with their devotion to Baal and Asherah, it was torn down. So Elijah took 12 stones, according to the number of the tribes of the sons of Jacob, to whom the word of He Who Has came, saying, "Israel shall be your name." And with the stones, he built an altar in the name of He Who Is. So Eliyahu begins to gather the people around for their first proper sacrifice in years.